Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. Today, from the right, we have...
DJ McGuire, a progressive conservative from Suffolk, Virginia. Content warning, I am sober today.
Nice! And from the left, we have...
Rebecca Kushmider, a progressive feminist from Kensington, Maryland. And content warning, I do hate things this week, so there will be plenty of hate from me.
And I'm Greg Matuszak, a common sense liberal who has nothing to hide in his tax returns. And I probably shouldn't say that out loud. From Cincinnati, Ohio, Kevin Kelton is off this week, probably protesting, but there will be more on that story either later on or next week. But we will have more on that later. Please remember to go to the moreperfectunionpodcast.com where you can find articles. And today, of course, we're going to be discussing, first off, something that was inevitable, like death and taxes. I think we all saw this coming, the Kavanaugh confirmation. We knew it was there. It was going to happen no matter what happened. It was the tide. Did any of y'all think that this wasn't going to happen?
When Murkowski said she was voting no, that started to change my expectation a little.
Sure.
Because that surprised me.
Sure.
And I thought, wait a minute, if she's... I had figured Collins would be the one more likely to vote no than Murkowski. So when Murkowski voted no, that turned my ears up. But then, you know, then Collins said she was voting yes, and that was the end of that.
Yeah.
The only point at which I thought this might be imperiled was when the second and third allegations of misconduct came out. And I thought, you know, in a normal universe, the White House would have pulled it. In a normal White House, it would have gotten pulled. But I forgot that we are living in the age of rape culture, and the White House cheers that shit on instead of objecting.
Wow. Yeah, you know, whenever Jeff Flake opens his mouth, I feel like Charlie Brown and Lucy. And he's like, oh, you know, yeah, come on, kick the ball, Charlie Brown. Kick the ball. I'm going to vote no. And I'm like, oh, really? And he's like, yeah, come on. And I'm running towards it. And he's like, I won't pull it away. And just at the last moment, every time I'm flying and my shoes and clothes are running, you know, falling off, and I land flat on my back. Jeff Flake gets me every time. Yeah.
And now you're seeing more and more of why I left the Republican Party 2 years ago, because this is what happens when you stay. You do one of two things. You either follow Trump no matter what he does, or you engage in some of the, I guess, cognitive dissonance that a number of my friends who are still Republicans are doing right now. They have convinced themselves that he really did not do any of this. They have convinced themselves that all of these women who have come forward are lying. They have convinced themselves that Brett Kavanaugh is an innocent man. They're not even concerned about his fitness for the court. They're not concerned about his record. They're not concerned about any of that.
That's the scary part right there.
Yeah, but because that's really the only way that they can justify their policy aims, which involves the Supreme Court reversing various precedents. And for the standard Trump and proletariat, it doesn't matter what Kavanaugh did, because it didn't matter what Trump did, and they voted for him anyway. It's the supposed Trump critics in the Republican Party who essentially had to pretzelize themselves and to show that this is somehow different from Trump, because in their minds, Brett Kavanaugh didn't do anything wrong. That's their lifeboat. That's what they have to hang on to. And that's why they are the angriest ones on Twitter and Facebook and other social media. That's why they are talking about telling Brett Kavanaugh to sue for defamation. The Federalist did that this morning. That's why they want investigations as to how the letter was leaked and everything else, and investigations into Feinstein, because they have to convince themselves that Brett Kavanaugh is as pure as the driven snow. It's the only way their world doesn't get shattered. So I let my world get shattered and looked around and saw things for what they really were. They can't do that yet.
I want to offer a counter, a follow-up question to that. DJ, how many accused rapists have they defended in the past, though? Are these people who actually believe that rape between acquaintances is a real and persistent problem, or are they all too happy to dismiss allegations like this writ large? Because it's possible that this is part of who they are and who they have always been, and they're applying it to this as opposed to contorting themselves into it. They're just reaching back into their known playbook.
I'm not entirely
depressing.
That is a very good point. I'm actually trying to think back to the ones that I know. This is, I did not know any of these early 90s when a lot of this came out more. The closest thing to this is probably one of those rare circumstances where the accusation was false, and that was the whole Duke fiasco.
Right.
That I remember hearing them through, and for the most part, as I remember their opinions, they largely were willing to believe the accuser until her story just completely fell apart. So the short answer is I don't know. I don't have enough data to say that one way or the other.
Okay.
Because I do have a suspicion that many of the people who are saying Brett Kavanaugh is innocent are skeptics about the idea of known assailant.
Well, I do know that
not the people in your circle. I'm completely willing to accept what you're saying about the people you know, but I'm just saying that that's still out there. That is still part of the
discourse. I don't dispute that. I don't dispute that. I also know that the ones I'm talking about, the Trump critics, they were all willing to believe any accuser who came forward and accused Donald Trump of something. That much I do remember.
And that's scary and stuff. Did you guys listen to Senator Collins, press conference?
Oh, where she said that she believed that something maybe happened to Dr. Ford, but not what she was saying in the hearing.
Yeah, but in addition to that, she was like, she pretty much said he was pretty terrible. It was a terrible job interview. She saw this. But, after talking to him, he seemed like a really nice guy. And that pretty much said it. He promised he wasn't going to do that. So,
Let's be honest here. Well, we are being honest here.
Have you been lying to me? Have you been lying to me this entire time?
Try that again. You know what this all really tells us?
What?
What it really tells us is as wacky and as ridiculous as it seemed at the time, Ed Whalen's strategy worked.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This was essentially
out on the idea that someone raped, just not him.
Just not him. It's Plan B. Plan B worked.
Wow.
It worked for Collins. It worked for most of the people most of the Senate Republicans. And for those Trump critics that I'm talking about, it's probably worked for a lot of them too. Is that, something must have happened to her, but it wasn't him.
Okay. So moving on. How is this going to affect the midterms?
Well, Kevin has I'm speaking for Kevin because he can't be here this week.
Okay, well, talk in a higher pitched voice.
Well, my Kevin is terrible, so I'm not going to do that anymore. Kevin is of the opinion that because this story has increased Republican anger, increased Republican interest, and increased Republican energy, that it will hurt Democrats in the November elections. The intensity gap is closed. The outrage gap is closed. That's Kevin's view on it. I'm not so sure. Yes, the intensity gap has closed a bit, and yes, we're seeing movement towards the Republican challenger in the Senate race in North Dakota. We're seeing movement toward the Republican challenger in the Senate race in Tennessee.
Right.
We saw some movement toward Ted Cruz in Texas. I haven't seen the same movement in Indiana or Missouri. I haven't seen it in Arizona, where there's a poll that was just out this morning that showed Kyrsten Sinema still has a 3-point lead in that state. And I took a look at Nate Silver in 538. He was talking about sort of how this is impacted. And he made the argument that in terms of the House races, it's not really having much of an impact whatsoever. And part of the reason is because for all this has done to increase Republican intensity, and I think it has done that, I think it has also moved independents further towards the Democrats. Now, in ruby red states, like, say, in North Dakota or West Virginia or something, the Republican intensity is going to be more important. In those suburban and moderate House districts, the fact that the independents have moved closer to the Democrats is more important than the ginned up Republican turnout. So I would say we still have to sort out what happens for the Senate. But I think in terms of the House, if anything, this might be a small advantage for the Democrats when it's all said and done.
Well, and we're still just a hair under a month away from the election, and that's an eternity in politics, as we all know. So the enthusiasm today could lead to torpor tomorrow, and you find people, you know, very comfortably on their couch on election night, having forgotten to go out and vote. Whereas I think that at least, you know, the core base of the Democratic Party, women, particularly women of color, are furious. And, you know, we're out there organizing, we're volunteering, and we're doing a lot to get ourselves and other members of the base motivated. So, you know, is the enthusiasm gap going to stay closed, or is it going to open back up again? I'd be willing to bet it opens a bit, because there's nothing like victory to make you stay home, you know, to feel comfortable.
Well, on that note, though, critics have said, and I'll be that guy, this is probably Donald Trump, President Trump's best week ever. And they've said that not being sarcastic either. And I know a lot of you are like, really? But this is his second Supreme Court nominee that he's gotten on the bench, okay? Unemployment is
at
its...
I don't know if the first one counts.
You guys can, you know, a win is a win. And you know what? Unemployment is at 3.7. He's doing victory laps with toilet paper on his shoes. He's crushing it. So you're right. You know, he is crushing it.
And you know what? And everyone gets a good week every now and then. Yeah. I mean, the guy stayed off Twitter.
For the most part. Except
for the most part. He was holding rallies instead of tweeting.
Yeah. He's back on.
I haven't been on Twitter today.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's going to have good weeks. We couldn't expect this presidency to be, you know, an unmitigated failure from moment A to moment Z. So yeah, he's having a good week. The unemployment numbers are great. I'm psyched. I don't want high unemployment, but that doesn't mean that next week will be a good week or the week after that. We are living in news cycles that change by the nanosecond. And I just don't trust any status quo to remain longer than, I don't know, 12 hours.
All right. What say if the Democrats get the Congress back, get the House back, what are the odds of us going after Kavanaugh? Impeachment process.
I think the House Judiciary Committee will start an investigation. I think they'll be compelled by their voters and by the facts to start an investigation. Whether it actually leads to articles of impeachment, that honestly depends on how far the articles of impeachment against Trump go. I don't know. I don't know if the public is prepared for two impeachments at once. They may be. Who knows?
Two? You think there will only be two?
Or more. But I think it may come down to – it may be a situation where if the Trump impeachment gets a lot of legs and a lot of momentum forward, then Democrats may decide, all right, let's focus more on the Trump impeachment and put the other impeachments on the back burner. Whereas if for whatever reason the Trump impeachment peters out, then – it may be more likely that they look to move against Kavanaugh. Either way, it'll be difficult to see anybody get convicted in the United States Senate. The Judiciary Committee will certainly look into Kavanaugh. What they'll go beyond that, I don't know.
Right.
Can he even be impeached for acts prior to his tenure on the bench? Like, what are the grounds for impeachment? I mean, yes, the perjury and confirmation hearing would be significant if they could, you know, prove that he was lying in his hearings. That would be one thing. But is any of this an impeachable offense, or are you supposed to be conducting misconduct in your job to be asked to leave your job?
Yeah. Can he get impeached for saying, like, the Devil's Triangle is a drinking game. I mean, and is that ridiculous? And are we that petty of a party or a system that we would impeach a lifetime appointment because he lied about having a statement of a sex with two men and a woman was not that, but a drinking game.
Well, I'm more interested in the lies about his role in judicial nominations in the Bush administration.
Well, we'll get to that
in a
second.
Those are more significant
right there,
lies.
That was a lie in itself.
The definition of boofing is not a national emergency.
But it was a lie. It was a lie.
It was a lie, but it's an unprovable lie.
It's not unprovable.
Unless Urban Dictionary is admissible as evidence. The word boofing is probably not going to come up again. But you know, his role in the Bush administration, there is so much we don't know, and there is so much he potentially lied about. I think that is really where we could possibly trap him in perjury. Notice the perjury. Reveal the perjury. But again, I'm not convinced that you can impeach someone for something they did before taking the job.
What, did you guys read the his apology? And it was an apology in Wall Street Journal this week.
Did he apologize for being a drunken, grab-handy McJerk face? Or did he apologize for yelling in a hearing?
His emotional state. Like, it was a lot of, oh, baby, baby. You know I wouldn't do that again. I wouldn't be impartial. No, that wasn't me. It was like every abusive boyfriend who's ever said anything, he was like, that wasn't me. Oh, if you confirm me, I wouldn't do that. Sometimes I get angry, but that's not me. Oh, baby, you know I love you. It was stuff like that. It was really creepy.
Yeah. I mean, just the basic is, if your nominee has to take out a public apology in the Wall Street Journal, he's a bad fucking nominee.
Yeah. It was.
He's a bad nominee. Leave it alone.
It was weird.
It's the whole thing is weird. When he's doing interviews on Fox News, not to, like, you know, talk about the puppy he saved from a drowning river, but to, you know, convince us that he doesn't suck, that he's not a sexual abuser. He was a bad nominee. Whether or not he's going to be a good justice, I don't know. I don't like anything he's done in his past, but that's a policy thing. But for Christ's sake, he's the worst nominee I've ever seen in my life. He's bad at being a nominee.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean he'll be a bad judge. Someone who interviews poorly for a job doesn't necessarily mean they'll be bad at their job.
There are some politicians who are great policymakers who are, you know, wonks of the highest degree. They're smart. They really know their stuff and they suck at campaigning. And then there are politicians who are fantastic at campaigning, but could not legislate their way out of a paper bag. It's possible Kavanaugh is one of these people that the confirmation process, he is just terrible at it, but he's actually a pretty good judge. I don't know.
We don't know.
I just know that he's a liar who hasn't shown contrition for the fact that he was a blackout drunk who behaved abominably towards people around him in his youth.
The fact that we are willing to admit that perhaps he is a good judge, even though he is a kind of terrible at this process, does that show growth and some bipartisanship on our behalf? I mean, does that make us good people? And by me saying, does that make us good people, that kind of takes away from that whole good people thing. A little bit. It takes kind of the shine off our apple, but still.
Yeah, well, I'm known as a bad person, actually. It's on my LinkedIn profile. Rebecca Kushmider, writer, bad person.
I think we're doing okay. But moving on to other things that are not so good. This is my bad segue. If the House regains control by the Democrats, there is one thing that we are finally going to see through some obscure law, and that's Trump's tax returns. We are finally going to see them. Okay. And the New York Times says they could be pretty bad. DJ, do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Donald Trump has famously refused to release his tax returns. However, his father, who died almost 20 years ago, made no such promise. And his tax returns, courtesy of his nephew, apparently, were made available to the New York Times. And it turned out that not only was Fred Trump very good at avoiding taxes, as in using the law properly to ensure that his tax bill was low, but he was also a genius at evading taxes, lying until the cows come home to ensure your tax bill is dropped even further. among other things he did, was hire his son Donald at age 3 and pay him $200,000 a year for what we have no idea.
For going boom in the potty. Yeah,
keeping his room clean.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that.
Transporting toilet paper on his
Fred, creating various trusts and transferring ownership of his real estate holdings from one trust to another, a trust that changing it from a company that he owned to a trust that he and his children owned as a way of avoiding gift taxes and future inheritance taxes. And then, of course, creating essentially a purchasing company that was owned by his children. And then having that purchasing company mark up every single internal transaction that they had so that essentially Fred Trump was paying his children through overpriced transactions as a way of avoiding gift and inheritance taxes. Essentially, again, Fred Trump lied through his teeth to keep his kids in style and keep the IRS away from any of his money. This kind of shit is illegal, seriously illegal. And that's why now the state of New York is looking into it. And on any other week and in any other administration, this would be the major scandal that crowded everything else off the front pages. It broke last week, so here we are.
So, but here's the question, though. Here's the question. Now, this is Fred Trump, okay? Can the sins of the father be brought down upon his son?
Yes.
Really?
Because he was the recipient of all of this.
20 years? Is there a statute of limitations on this?
I don't – whatever the statute of limitations is
– sure.
It's certainly not long enough to stop the state of it. It's not short enough to stop the state of New York from looking into it. They are looking into it right now.
Really?
According to the Times story.
And
so
these are taxes that pertain directly to the Trump Organization or any other business entities that continue to exist that Donald Trump was in control of at the time these shenanigans were going on. This could implicate his businesses and him directly.
Wow.
Also, if his father was doing it, he's probably doing it. And the IRS and New York State Tax Authority should be looking at his more recent tax returns for both personal and business and whatever salary he's paying Barron or whatever, because there is almost no chance that he isn't repeating the same tricks his father did now that he's learned them.
And actually, that reminds me of the joke I was going to use, which is, what job does Barron have in the Trump Organization today?
Yeah.
he tells Jared what to do.
God, that would actually probably be an improvement.
So yeah, this is a very big deal. This is a very serious deal. And among other things, it completely puts the lie to the notion that Donald Trump was a self-made man. We all kind of knew he wasn't, but this makes it abundantly clear that he wasn't.
Well, the same people who think that Brett Kavanaugh didn't mistreat people in high school and college also think that Trump is a self-made man. The delusion is strong in America in 2018.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm going to be that common sense liberal. I'm going to be that guy again. And I'm going to say, look, 4 or 5 years ago, every 2 weeks, some paper would say, hey, we've got Hillary's emails, or we've got the cross that will, you know, put Hillary down, or, you know, we've got the silver bullet. This is it. This is it. And all my conservative friends and family would be like, this is it. This is it. We've got Hillary's email server installer technician, and he's going to testify. And every 2 weeks, they'd all get excited and like, this is it. In a month, she's going down, and nothing happened. So,
well, I'm not right. Yeah, I don't think any of it. Yeah, and I don't think any of us are saying that this issue is definitely going to be the issue that forces Donald Trump out of office.
Oh, good.
I still hold that that Donald Trump will not leave the White House before January 20th, 2021. And whether he does leave on that date depends on us, the American people, voting against him. I still hold to that because I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, one, I love the fact that you make
– But I think it's a possibility that when he leaves office, he might have nothing left. I think that there is a chance that tax authorities will discover exactly what he hasn't been paying and start putting liens on all of his businesses and all of his assets, and that he's going to walk out of the White House without a pot to piss in. And well, that would actually delight me.
The fact that DJ made a prediction makes me happy. 'Cause he, Because he makes terrible predictions, and that kind of makes me happy. But it could backfire because he could actually stay in there for another 4 years. So that could actually backfire on me. So moving on, help me out with another thing. Recently, we saw NAFTA undergo a change. And maybe it was for the better, maybe it was for the worse. The only thing I know is I can't pronounce it anymore. It's no longer NAFTA, it's YMSCA, which sounds terrible. It's the USMCA, which is the United States-Mexico something agreement. What is that?
Canada
agreement. Canada. That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
That's terrible.
Sounds like the acronym for the Marine Corps, USMC.
Yeah.
Adding A, like United States Marine Corps, awesome. I don't know.
They are not creative people. United States, Mexico, Canada agreement doesn't even have trade or anything in there. Anywho, obviously they're not being judged on creativity or style. But it's the same as NAFTA, but different.
No,
it's not.
Yeah. It's same as the first.
Yeah. It's the same but worse. And now I say this as someone who always supported the North American Free Trade Agreement. I still support the North American Free Trade Agreement. I would rather this be rejected and the North American Free Trade Agreement kept, which Congress can actually do, because it is Congress that passed the implementation legislation in 1993. That created the North American, or that ratified the North American Free Trade Agreement. Donald Trump can say he's withdrawing from the agreement, but he cannot remove the implementing legislation. Only Congress can do that. So if Congress doesn't repeal the implementing legislation, NAFTA stays in place unless they replace it with USMCA, which they shouldn't, and here's why.
Tell us why.
The big thing is what this is, the big problem is what it has done regarding the automobile requirements, and that 75% of the automobile has to be made in North America to qualify for the free trade checkmark to avoid tariffs. The tariff itself is so relatively low that you're actually probably going to see more folks pulling automated production out of North America because they don't want to risk 74% versus 76% and getting hit with a tariff. The tariff is so small, so you know what? We'll just keep our production where we are. Maybe even we'll pull some of the production out and just swallow it and take the tariff. It does nothing to reduce the tariffs that Trump has already put in place. The steel and aluminum tariffs are still there. Obviously the tariffs against China are still there. There is talk of creating a board to regulate the three currencies, although it's relatively toothless at this point. There is talk about forcing Canada and Mexico not to engage in trade agreements with non-market countries, and which is mainly China and North Korea. And while we should not have free trade with China and North Korea, I don't like the fact that there is an international treaty essentially telling the three countries what their other trade policies are going to be. That moves it closer to a customs union, which is just flat out bad.
DJ, explain what a non-market country is. I don't know that phrase.
It's a non-market country is whatever the United States, Canada, and Mexico deem a non-market country. There's really no.
It's not an economic term. It's a political term.
It's more a political term.
Okay.
I would say.
Am I a non-market country?
No, you are not, because you're not a country.
Damn it!
But most
how do
people...
you know, DJ? He hasn't had a confirmation hearing.
Yeah, it's true.
We haven't released Greg's documents. He could be a country, and we don't know.
Well, okay, that's a possibility. But the fact of the matter is, in terms of what a quote non-market country, that's usually the consensus is that's China, North Korea, Venezuela these days. I really can't think of any others maybe Russia is a non-market country these days. So, but the point is, it was specifically designed to keep Canada from making a free trade agreement with China. This is moving away from freer trade and moving towards managed trade. That is bad, and it should not happen. And I hope that Congress shoots it down and says, no, we are keeping NAFTA as it is, because while NAFTA does need some modification, while NAFTA needs modernization, this is not modernization. This is making it worse.
So when does this go up for a vote, and will it go up for vote before or after midterms?
Apparently, it will go up for a vote in 2019. So we don't know what Congress will look like then. The assumption is that it would be harder to pass in a Democratic Congress, which would be hopeful, although maybe not for the right reasons, because a number of the Democratic elected officials are protectionist.
Right.
But, you know, we'll take what we can on that.
All right. Moving on. The Trump administration right now is looking for all sorts of things to rally against. They're always looking at the Democrats. They're looking at NFL players. They're looking at people who drive too slow in the left-hand lane. But right now, they're also looking at the Chinese Communist Party again, which is funny because
Be very, very quiet. I'm hunting webbit holes.
Exactly. What's that about?
This is, I don't mean to be the one who explains everything, but for those who are listening, I'm the one who kept throwing these topics up.
These
topics are all my fault, so I'm now explaining why I think they're important.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about
Fair, I don't really like the Chinese Communist Party either. So if
and that's the point,
we're not supposed to like them. They're not cool.
No, they are bad guys. They are terrible to their own people. They are terrible to their neighbors, and they are terrible to us. The problem here is that the Trump administration, in particular the president himself, does not dislike the Chinese Communist Party for the same reasons that we do. He doesn't care what they do to their own people. He doesn't care what they do to their neighbors. He doesn't care what they do to us geopolitically. He cares about the trade deficit because he doesn't understand what trade deficits are. So he is now essentially trying to shoehorn his ridiculous protectionism into a broader anti-communist policy. He's also doing it because he wants his own Russia. You know, he thinks that the Democrats are using the Russia hoax, as he calls it, against him. And so now he wants a China hoax to use against the Democrats. The end game is that he will eventually go and rally somewhere and say that the Democrats, they all love China more than they love America, so vote Republican because Republicans love America. That's where he's going.
And he hasn't already done that. That seems like a line he's actually said. Because wasn't he saying that we've all voted for open borders already? He's made up a fictional open border bill, and Dianne Feinstein voted.
He created an open border bill out of whole cloth. He says Democrats all love MS-13. He has not yet said that Democrats love China more than they love America, but he's going to get there. He's
going to say, give him a minute. You know, there's another rally this week, I'm sure. Yeah.
There's a month
we'll get to that soon.
He'll drop it at a rally. Probably that one by your house, Greg.
I know.
But we'll get to that. But what the point I'm trying the warning that I would have for Democrats is don't fall for this nonsense.
So Donald Trump,
storm.
He's just a mess when it comes to the world stage. And the fact that, I mean, he's quite terrible. I mean, everything he's done has just been a big old mess. And the fact that his own party hasn't like stopped him, like, no, you don't get to go anywhere, you know, and disconnected his phones. I mean, it's just amazing to me that they haven't done this and hired him like a writer to for this sort of stuff, because it's really bad at this point. Or am I wrong? Am I off base?
Well, he's uncontrollable. He's an agent of chaos. He's wildly ignorant on vast swaths of information. He's unwilling to learn, and attempting to control a grown man who thinks he is royalty with some divine right to rule is apparently very, very difficult. And meanwhile, he is an avenue for achieving certain goals that the Republican Party's had for a really long time, including conservative courts at every level, reduced taxes for corporations, gerrymandering, and dark money. That they are getting what they want out of this.
In addition to that, there are tens of millions of Americans who follow Donald Trump's every tweet and every word, and their attachment to the Republican Party is through him, not through everyone else. So the Republican Party needs those vote, or has told themselves they need those voters this fall. They need them in 2020. They need them beyond. And because of that, they are essentially stuck with him.
So while this is all going on, and Trump is kind of making a mockery on the world stage, there's a Saudi journalist possibly murdered in Turkey. The head of Interpol is missing in China. And the Trump administration's answer to all this chaos is a resounding fill in the blank.
It's a resounding blank.
It is a blank.
It's crickets. It's crickets.
Yeah, the blank is the answer.
Because they don't care.
They don't care, and you know, and a lot of them don't know. Ask Jared what Interpol is.
It's a band.
And why it's important. It's a band.
It's awesome. It's an English band.
It was your band in college.
No, there really is a band called Interpol. They're awesome.
Okay, they really should be. Yeah, that's great.
How do you not know that? How do you not know the band Interpol?
Yeah, no, I mean, like, I could quote Margaret Mead, but I don't know music.
Moving on. It's one of those things that, how do they not know these things, and how they just don't care?
Well, it's the whole America First thing. They don't give a shit about the rest of the world. They're just trying to make us richer. They think bank accounts are the ultimate barometer of value, and they're trying to make America richer, and they just don't care what's happening elsewhere. Like, are we blowing up NATO? Yeah, sure, but who cares? They're way the hell over there. It's this malicious apathy.
Do we have a right, and is it our responsibility to take care of these Saudi journalists and to be watching over these heads of Interpol? Is America still the police of the world, or have we just stepped aside?
Even if we're not the police of the world, we should be making statements to say we do not support the assassination of journalists. We do not support the disappearing of international investigative bodies. You cannot behave this way. This is against the basic tenets of international law.
In addition,
we should at least be able to make a statement. We shouldn't be sitting around with our thumbs up our Twitter.
In addition to that, and I know I'm one of the last neoconservatives on foreign policy, and I get that, but tyrants make worse neighbors. Tyrants make worse trade partners. Right. Those things still matter to us. It is in our interests to have more democracies around the world and fewer tyrannies. I genuinely believe it is. Where using military force is unwise, and in many cases using military force is unwise, in particular the two examples we're mentioning here, then you use the power of persuasion.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, and I think he also thinks that if you are suffering human rights abuses at the hand of a tyrant, it's your own fault. Like, if you're poor, it's because you didn't evade enough taxes to get rich. If you are abused by a guy at a party, it's because your skirt was too short. If you are living under a tyrannical, murderous regime and you happen to get murdered, it's because you didn't choose to suck up. He is the ultimate victim blamer. He will always gravitate towards the person with power, even if the person with power is patently awful.
Oh, yeah.
True.
Like the dictator in the Philippines. What's his name?
Duterte.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's a...
He's a big fan of Erdogan.
Right.
Like, Donald Trump's idols are the worst people in the world.
Oh, yeah. Like, human garbage. I mean, yeah. Yeah. But yeah. Speaking of... So, this week, Trump is holding his next rally. I don't know if I'd mentioned this or it's come up. Is going to be held 3 blocks away from where I teach 6th grade. Okay? And I'm not kidding. And it's just one of those things that I'm like, yeah, great, fabulous. So, yeah. And it's one of those things like, so what do I do? And the town is kind of has mixed emotions. And the town is very red, but it's at the exact same time as their Friday night football game. So they may have to forfeit, and they're not happy about that.
Well, no one's ever happy about that.
Southwest Ohio football?
Yeah, no, that'd be like try to forfeit a game in Texas. Forget it. Don't go there.
But that's beside the point. So the big issue now is, how should I protest? Should I go out there? And, you know, I was having a discussion with my father about protesting. He gets really upset about protesters, like protesters, people who block streets or people who go out are just the worst, because he's got a right to drive on those streets. And now I'm just blocking traffic. Anyone who does a rally, terrible, because, you know, they're just clogging up the. He's got to take a side street.
Yeah, the First Amendment differs from your father, because like it doesn't say the freedom to drive down the street. It does say the right to peaceably assemble.
People who take a knee during football games drives him nuts, because you know it offends him. So the question is, what is the best way to protest? And what is an acceptable way? I think violence is off the table. I think punching a Nazi is funny because they're Nazis. I mean, honestly, if you stand with a flag that has killed millions of people.
Yeah, no, if you have a swastika on your armband, your head is fair game.
Your head should be fair game. And I say that somewhat jokingly, but let's take violence off the table because we're better than that. We'll go the high road. So what is the best way for y'all to protest? Rebecca?
Well, if I were going to suggest something for you in this particular rally.
Yes.
You know that the thing that Jimmy Fallon and the Roots do where they bring on musicians and they sing famous songs with classroom instruments?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can do
that.
Yeah,
you need to just find a nice spot where you're allowed to be and, you know, make sure you're legally permitted to be there. Get some people with some classroom instruments and just start singing Give Peace a Chance. Mm. I mean, that because that is peaceful. It is upbeat. It's, you know, a little colorful xylophone. It gets the point across. It's anybody who's offended by that is working too hard at being offended. In terms of the actual effectiveness of protest, showing up to rallies, showing up to demonstrations, to marches, to anything is always feels good. It's good for the soul. It puts you in a community mindset and you understand that you have like-minded people around you. You always have to follow that up with a call to the lawmaker who needs to know about it and say, hey, just so you know, I was at this thing. It mattered enough to me to be there. Maybe even send them a selfie of you there, because nobody's taking attendance at these things. And even if they were, they're not sharing it with your lawmakers. You have to verify your participation with the people who need to know.
So with that in mind, thanks for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at #MPUPodcast and share our link on the Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. And if you'd like to join in our political debate between shows, join us in our Facebook group, Open Fire Politics. We're all there, and we'd love to see you there, too. Rebecca, what are you doing this week?
I am posting lots and lots of links to voter registration sites, voter registration deadlines, early voting dates, all kinds of information about how you can get out and vote.
Okay, I'm going to probably be bailing Kevin out of jail because of his illegal protesting. So
it's the Occupy Kevin movement.
The Occupy Kevin. You can send us bail money.